Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a drunken soiree in the within.
Chris and Stu present Our Core Listing, the podcast.
Hello. Just before we get on with today's episode, Chris and I want to tell you all about our Patreon page. It won't take long, but we think you're going to want to hear it.
Because you're missing out, quite frankly.
Massively.
All the more risque stuff that we sometimes think, oh, can we get away with that? We put it on our Patreon pages. And there's over 150 episodes for our $10 subscribers.
Absolutely. So for whatever that works out in UK pounds, what's that, about £7.50 a month?
Yeah, for the price of a bag of chips, for a Savoy and chips, you can actually have us in your ears four times extra a month.
That's four episodes minimum that we put out exclusively for Patreons. Plus, there's loads of, we video most of our episodes now, and the videos, you can watch all of the podcasts now over on Patreon as well. We put up loads of other unique content over there.
Yeah, there's pictures there. It's basically our version of our OnlyFans account, isn't it, basically? So you get the sort of pictures on there of the behind the scenes of Stu tucking into a pot noodle, basically. Sort of stuff that shouldn't be available to the public.
No one needs to see that. But that's all. We just thought we'd give you a quick heads up that if you're enjoying these podcasts, then be aware, for like £7.50, you can go and listen to over 150 exclusive episodes. And there's some great ones over there with previous guests as well. Loads of names that you're going to recognise if you've been listening to the weekly podcast we put out.
And yeah, and also, if you are a subscriber, we're more than likely to do one of your top fives if you recommend it, because we prioritise the patrons first, don't we, as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So we try and sort of do as many top five suggested by you lot as well. So, yeah, head over to Patreon. Where can they find out about it, Chris?
Patreon.com/hardcore listing. Easy peasy. And you can watch an intro video there as well of us in jacuzzis and doing sexy stuff.
With Gal Porter.
With Gal Porter. Not doing sexy stuff with Gal Porter. Can I just clear that up? Gal, I'm not trying to drag your name through the mud.
And Scroobius Pip.
Yeah.
All right. patreon.com/hardcore listing.
Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to Hardcore Listing Podcast. I am Stuart Whiffin. Sitting not next to me but opposite me via Zoom is
Christopher Glasson. I'm always with you, mate, in your heart.
In there.
Deep in there.
So before we introduce our guest this evening, we should say a quick thank you to our sponsors, love-beer.co.uk and
Bang Boom Creative.
Yeah.
Yes.
So go and check them out. They've sponsored us from pretty much from the beginning, and they're ruddy lovely lads.
Yeah, and expect some really good... Luke did an incredible photo shoot with us recently, didn't he?
Yeah.
He really knows how to...
He made us look average, didn't he? Which
yeah,
is amazing.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
And also, we should say a big thank you and hello to our producer 76, who is making this sound delicious for your ear holes. So, just quickly, if this is your first time listening to Hardcore Listing Podcast, explain what they're going to get, Chris.
You're going to get a triple gold standard podcast. So. I'm not going to explain the premise. We basically invite guests on each week to discuss a top five of their choice. This can vary from, I keep saying sandwich fillings,
It's not like the only thing that we've ever had on.
That's a good subject.
It really is. We do anything from the best quotes from a Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian, to top five death scenes from the Final Destination film series. And yeah, and that's what we do. We go over that with our guests, and sometimes it goes off topic a little bit, and
that's the joy, though. I've got to say, like, I've had so much goodwill online from that hardcore listening about Monty Python. I've had people like quoting their own favourite quotes, and sometimes it's like full on discussions. We're doing the scenes,
recreate it, make your own play.
I don't watch the movie anymore. I just, like, you know, online. I have
go back through your chat history on Instagram.
Yeah.
So those lovely voices you're hearing there are when we often put out shouts as to who would you like to hear back and what have been your favourite episodes. Time and time again, Billy Lund's top five lines from Life of Brian comes up, as does Rowena Alice's top really? Five death scenes. And so it just so happens that they're a couple. So it was like, well, let's get them both on. So
their powers combine.
Oh yeah.
Power couple.
Definitely for like double the effect.
Yeah.
We'll cancel each other out.
Yeah.
It's so mental. It's just you're just like, no, screw that. They can't be together.
We cannot put this up.
Well, we it was 1 million downloads the other week, and we kind of were sat there thinking, you know, should we see if there's any people that we'd like to have back on and that stood out, and it didn't take us long. We went through about 100 other guests and we got to a pair of you, and you were both like, I won't say who was first. It was 100, 102, but no, it was a really easy decision for us guys, because honestly, like those episodes, I mean, we recorded them a good while ago now. It's got to be
years
well
ago,
over it. Yeah. But they,
like,
still
had so much fun. Laughing. All I can remember is just laughing.
It's like the fact that I remember I had my mum's rating of the deaths as well.
That's right.
And I got her to like rank them as like, she's like, yeah, give that a 5.
You know, so good.
She's got a funny taste in movies.
She has. She loves stuff that's really quite sinister, but I think she just likes anything that she doesn't ruin too much for herself when she looks up the ending to see whether it's worth carrying on with the film.
He's a scientist, right? So she wants the answer before the experience.
Yeah,
That's brilliant.
She goes to bed with, like, she doesn't go to bed with audiobooks.
No,
of, like,
it's like
really
Prime
nice,
Suspect.
Yeah, she goes to bed with, like,
that's brilliant.
Dark murder thrillers. Like,
I'm a bit tapped, you know.
My mum loves sci-fi. Like, so my mum is nearly 80. And I'll go around there, and literally, I don't need any other channel. She'll be watching sci-fi, and they'll be like, I love it so bad, because she loves B-movies as well. And like Anaconda, which is a widely panned, hated film, it will come on, and I'm like, I'll see it, and I'll just look over. Mum will be like, should we watch Anaconda? And I'm like, yes, Mum, let's watch Anaconda. I can't wait. So, yeah, good on mums for having, like, interesting taste in film.
So, Billy, Ro, what is your top five today going to be?
So we have chosen, well, it was kind of like me and you, when I said it to you, I pitched it, didn't I? And you were like, yes.
She always comes up with
this
the best
is pretty
ideas.
Much anything in our marriage. I'm like, shall we do this? And you're like, yes.
Yeah, I'm a yes guy. She's the ideas woman.
We've decided to go move away from films, and we thought, because it's like such a great celebration with you guys, we're going back to our roots of music, and we have chosen our top five screams in rock music.
Genius.
Incredible.
Genius.
Yeah, so I thought it'd be quite good fun. Could be a bit chaotic at points, depending on how musical you want to get to reenact stuff.
We had so much fun, like, not just doing the show, but like researching for this show and then whittling it down to five has been so amazing. Like, we've been sat here for a couple of hours going, oh.
We've been going through live performances of them again.
Check
just
that
be like,
Seattle performance
we've just got to check.
93.
We've got to check this. Like, is it as good live as it is on the song? Are they worthy to be in this list?
Yeah, and every single one, we're just like, oh
yeah,
my God, we
I think
picked
we're still,
the best
yeah,
five.
I think we're still happy with it. It's
that's
a good
so good. So this it's been a thorough, there's been a thorough critique, not only of like the studio version, but when they've taken it on stage as well. I like it.
Yeah. A real holistic incredible. Take. Like, and I've been sat there going, do you know what's so great about the rock scream, right? Is the absence that precedes it. And then I start talking about, like...
the science of it.
Yeah. I'm like, oh.
It's like, from a producer's perspective, it's this. I'm like, yeah.
And it kind of, it explains the human experience of, like, the need to scream sort of sense of emptiness. And then I just, like, go... that just turned Slipknot up. Come on, this is.
You're spoiling it. You're giving spoilers to stuff.
It's so good because when I started going, oh, right, top five, great choice. And recently I keep thinking, I think we're going to run out soon. And yet every time people say stuff, it's like, oh no, obviously, it's limitless. And and I started and I thought, oh, I can think of a few. Because I wouldn't say I classically always thought I'd know just screams off the top of my head. And then I was like, oh, there's just fucking too many.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, and you know, and there's different types of screaming, and
let's get down
lost in a rabbit hole of it. My girlfriend and her mum are just like, what's going on in the lounge?
But that's the thing, you've got to also think of the context of the song as well. And like, some of them we've picked because they remind us of when we first heard the song, or it reminds us of our teenage years. It's amazing how screams in some songs have more of an impact because of that and because of the history to us personally. So our list is probably way different to anyone else's list, but obviously I guess there are reasonings behind why we've chosen them, which we will attempt to explain for this podcast.
Incredible. Excellent.
Number five, let's do it.
So number five, we've actually gone with some friends of ours, haven't we? Yeah. So
Hardcore listing guests.
So we've chosen Blood Red Shoes, Je M'Appelle.
Amazing.
It's from their album In Time, Two Voices. And we thought this was good because it's a two-for-one. It's a twofer. You get screams from both Steve and Laura Mary. And I think part of the reason I really wanted to put this in is because I'm really good friends with Laura Mary. And in real life, she is so quiet.
My God,
she
is like the meekest person.
Yeah. Like, in
really?
The amount of people who she's met of my friends, they're like, your friend Laura Mary really doesn't like me. Oh. I'm like, no, it's not. She's just a bit shy. Yeah. It's just what she's like. And she speaks really quietly, doesn't she? She's a quiet talker. And then with this song, you just have like both her and Steve's like screams throughout the song. It's not just in the intro to each of their verses, because we just love also the sort of dynamic of female and male vocals bouncing off each other, as you have in your own band.
For sure.
But we just thought all the way through, and it's what they declare to be a punk song, and we just think it's absolutely fantastic. And it's just so different to what they're like in real life. But it just shows when you're pissed off and tensions rise, it's amazing what can come out in a song. Yeah.
And they're so, like, a lot of their songs are so melodic and they're so rhythmically, like, precise and really beautiful.
Yeah.
And you listen to In Time to Voices, like, the title track off of that record, and it's one of the most, like, serene, sublime songs you'll hear. Laura Mary is just, like, singing like an angel, and Steve's drumming's just sort of tripping along. But then you get to Je M'Appelle, and they play it last whenever they play live. And it's kind of like you go through this experience of seeing these great musicians just like noodling and singing really beautifully, and then they're like, right, we're going to say goodbye to everybody.
Two of them scream at each other. You can just see it's like, yeah, any tension between us, we're getting it out right now. Yeah, love that song.
Yeah. Great choice.
So are these in order of like the number one is the ultimate scream?
Yeah.
We've gone 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have actually kind ordered of
like,
them, yeah.
Yeah, we've moved them around. Like, we've listened to one track and just gone, like, because of the context of that song, that has to move up.
Yeah.
You know, so we've really thought, like, the scream in this song means something different to the scream in this song. And we think that at the current time, and maybe, like, considering also the time in which the scream happened, this is really important. It has to move further up.
And we're totally fun people to have at parties, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Oh, Pip would love you at a party, guys, trust me.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm laughing away just thinking, yeah, that's the sort of absolute anorak stuff that's a good night for me.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
I'm sitting there laughing, just going, oh, yeah, God, you'll be a right laugh. But I was thinking, that's a really good night in for me.
You know when people go, oh, I'm going to get a round in. I'm just going to go up to the... We're like, I'm going to get some more crisps in to like tear open, and we're all just sort of snacking on, and we're just chatting music and movies and like our favourite quotations just and that kind of thing.
Boring people to death, especially my sister. Whenever I have these conversations with her, she's just like, yeah, whatever, okay.
Your store of knowledge is like, she says your store of knowledge is based on really inconsequential information. The biggest knowledge store of
My sister is the woman who said to me, like, if you put your Simpsons knowledge to, like, if you use that space in your brain for useful facts, you'd, like, achieve a lot. And that's why I wrote my dissertation on the Simpsons, to be like, well, I've proven you wrong.
And you won an award on
it
as well.
I won an award for it.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah, see, you can talk. That's where I've learned about a lot of American politics is through The Simpsons. So my useless facts come in handy. And I'm lucky I found a nerd to sort of spend my days with who doesn't mind like nerding off each other, which sounds really sexual, which is not.
I get a certain amount of pleasure out of it. But like, I do sometimes see your eyes glaze over when I'm talking about Chaucer or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
That's where we don't have a commonality.
Yeah, there's no commonality there at all.
No.
I think that's fair. Like, you're saying with your big sister, I sometimes talk to my girlfriend about different, like, thinking. There's a guy called Edward de Bono I'm obsessed with, more so at the moment. And I talked to Molly, you've got to listen to this thing about the Gang of Three and Aristotle, Socrates. And
just quickly, out. Chris, not just Molly.
Not just... and like, I'll finish this thing and I'll be like waiting, and Molly will just look at me and go, thing is, I just really don't care. But it's good. You should listen.
More important for her to humour you or just to tell you it straight out. Like, that's another question. I'd say there's a lot of respect. But I think there's a lot of... I think you've got to have non-common ground in a relationship as well.
Yeah, because otherwise you just run out of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Especially when we've been together as long as we have compared to a lot of people our age
There's
well.
Something to work at. I'm going to convince them that this is brilliant. This is worth discussing at 3 in the morning.
It's insane. I worked out the other day. I've been with Billy for nearly half my life.
Wow.
Oh my God. Yeah, so it's a good job.
We've known each other so long.
Yeah, it's a good job that we still like... chat and shit.
It's got to be the key. It's got to be the key. And I don't know, with any sort of friendships or relationships, the antagonizing is part, I think, is quite a fun part of that. Because knowing where sort of the line is, but having that sort of ability to sort of like do it in a fun way, I think is so important.
Yeah.
And well, that's all that's our relationship, Stu, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Basically.
Yeah.
We used to agree on things because we actually are similar, but now we just, whatever Stu says, I'm looking for a reason why it's wrong. Even if
you've got to press the buttons. You've got to keep them on their toes. That's the thing.
I don't know if you want to play this game, Billy and Ro, but we started it on the last podcast because Chris is staying with. His girlfriend's her parents at the moment. And so the last few podcasts we've recorded, I've spotted over Chrissy's shoulder a kind of like shelf which has like, I think it's like 20 boxes within it.
Okay.
And but apparently it's all full of kind of shit tat.
So, that's your words.
So we now play Battleship, where you have to go like, A3, and then Chris goes and gets something from the box and brings it over. So I'll let you pick what box you want to see today.
I don't know. Should we go? I'll go C4 because it sounds explosive.
It does.
Okay. All right. Wait
there. I mean, this is hardly podcast gold for people that are listening. But
we're making this visual. Like, even though they can't see us, we're making this visual.
And Chris walks over to the wall, exploring with his fine fingers.
See, this is why you're on the radio.
Yeah. Right, Battleship.
I think you got unlucky there.
Is that an egg cup?
I'm not sure.
It's like ceramic.
I think it's a nice ceramic. Sort
mini
of,
bars.
Maybe you put
Jostic holder.
Yes, exactly that. But the one, if you'd have gone C5... Oh, you just missed out. I'm really sorry, but there we go.
I lost my prize.
Oh, but at least you opted for
C4. I got a pun
C4.
In, so that's good, yeah.
Billy, do you want to go? Do you want to quick
I'm definitely going to see five.
You're that asshole on the game shows where it's like someone's like, I guess it's worth £100, and then there's like £102. That's definitely.
You're the kind of guy that hangs around by the fruit machine, and when someone's put like 30 quid in, you then go and put 20p in and win the jackpot.
You know what? Like when I used to do competitive swimming, right? When I was really young, I started at like 7 or 8 years old and I finished when I was 16. And that's when I like moved into music. But at the swimming pool, there was there was a vending machine and I knew exactly which one they'd press the button for and it wouldn't come out. But if you gave it a nudge on the side, it would come out. So I'd wait for people, like, you know, I'd had an hour before I started swimming and I'd just sort of hang around the vending machine. If someone went for the Snickers, I can't remember what number it is now, but like they'd
C5
and go, "Oh, I've lost
me." He's such a rebel.
And they'd walk off and go to the front desk in the lobby to try and get their 50p back. I just quickly nudge it, take the stickers, and go.
Street smarts. That's absolute street smarts. That must have felt
And there was this Coke machine, and we knew exactly, like our hands and our wrists were small enough. We could put it like in the bottom right hand corner. You'd put your left hand in and you just go like there's this little shelf over the top, get
little
4 or 5 50 pences out of that, right? Go to the corner shop over the road. Incredible. And get some sweets.
Sorry, but before you was called like Billy from the Subway, was you called like the Harlow Hustler or something like that?
Artful Dodger.
Scallywag.
I did actually play the Artful Dodger in a school production of Oliver. Maybe that's
thing
where
is,
it's from.
You joke, but it's probably his family who taught him the tricks.
My family, I've got a family of criminals.
Billy, come here.
They'll love me saying that.
So what's in C5? I'm intrigued.
So I'd be really rubbish at battleships from the fact I gave away the location, but here we've got a mini villa, a little mini villa, amazing. And a hospital. Or is that a church? I think it's a...
Gorgeous.
Probably a church, that one, actually.
I think
actually.
It's a church.
I think that's a chapel, actually.
Sorry.
Oh, no. I don't know.
You need me to rush you to a hospital. I wouldn't be much use. There you go. So,
that looks like the kind of villa I would love to live in.
It's quite small, Billy.
Yeah. I'm
He's
fine
smaller
with that.
Than people think he is, yeah, maybe, him in real
when
life.
When he's on stage, everyone's like, so big.
It's like the whole band. The whole band
We're
are
so
much
tiny.
Smaller than people
expect
them to be.
People go up to Charlotte, they look down and go, you know, because she looks so commanding on the stage.
Yeah, she comes up to like about my chest.
Three,
here, and I'm
yeah.
like, oh my God.
Really? I'd fall for that. Absolutely would. just before we move on, that was a great number five. Have you ever spoken to sort of like Laura and where the sort of like. Where that transition comes from being sort of like, you know,
I did actually speak to her this morning. I said, oh, I'm going to be talking about you on a podcast. And she was like,
you're like
cheers.
Best mates,
so. Yeah, so we talk most days anyway.
Which
and,
is weird because I've known
you knew
Laura
her first,
for the longest,
yeah, but,
like, since 2004 or five.
And then, when was it? Because she did my a documentary for me at uni. I did a documentary called Good for a Girl, The Need for Feminism in Rock Music. And it was around the time, actually, just I pitched it just before there was that first Reading and Leeds poster where they took all the women out of it and it, no, all the men out of it and showed that how few women were on there. And you got us in contact, didn't you? And then literally as soon as we met, like we ended up talking for about 3 hours straight and we've just been friends like ever since. So I spoke to her about it this morning and she said how she would love to scream more. But she doesn't have the power of Brody Dahl or Courtney Love, who are main inspirations with that. But it's probably because she doesn't have a massive, like, 50 fag a day habit. so I think she would like to do it more. I think she'd like to scream more, but she feels she doesn't have the power to do it. But she's got such an eclectic taste in music. And But she grew up on Riot Girl stuff. She came from a little all-girl rock band before she met Steve. She was in a band called Lady Muck. So she's very much been influenced by like Courtney Love, Kathleen Hanna, L7, Slater Kinney, all these bands. So I think that's when it kind of comes out, especially in some of their older music. It's that influence coming through.
Wonderful.
Nice. We haven't had Laura. We had Steve on, didn't we? And Laura couldn't make it. So maybe we should drop Laura a message at some point, see if she's got a short.
She's
to
in the UK at the moment because of lockdown. So you might as well before she goes back to up. LA.
Shall we do number four?
Let's go for number four.
Yeah. Do you want to say number four?
Yeah, I do, because I love this song, and I remember when it first came out. And the band is Slipknot, which I gave away
earlier.
But before, like, I loved their, I think it was actually their second, but it was the first one that went worldwide. It was the one with Wait and Bleed and Eyeless. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I remember reading the interviews for Iowa when it came out, and they were talking about all the troubles that they had whilst making the record. But also the producer, Ross Robinson, is renowned for putting his bands kind of through a little bit of hell when they're in the studio.
Oh, really? I never knew.
Screaming at them. Joey Jordison would talk about when he was playing drums on Iowa, Ross Robinson would be stood right next to his hi-hat, and as he's drumming, going, harder, 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 hit harder, hit harder.
That's what she said.
Get it in, that's what she said. I like halfway through saying that, I was like, I knew that was about what she said. And you can kind of, I can imagine, like, during this song, which we've chosen People Equals Shit off of Iowa. The scream when Corey Taylor says, one more time, motherfucker.
It's so good.
And every time you hear that scream, you're like, you just know Ross Robinson is looking through the window of that booth, like, looking at Corey Taylor with his eyes like bare white, just like, I'm scream.
But it's like, it's quite renowned, isn't it, that they were going through real issues with the band, because they just hit this massive sort of popularity level that I don't think anyone expected with the debut. And so the weight was on their shoulders to then go and provide something incredible. And I think that's why they actually named it after, like, their hometown. So obviously that's probably a bit of an influence going back to their roots a little bit. But I just absolutely love this song, and the amount of times, like, you and I have driven through country lanes when you were living in the middle of nowhere in Thackstead, Essex, where it was very much, are you local? We would just roll, like, the windows down, and we'd just have this, and then just start, like, going mental. And the thing is, though, look at us. We are, like, the most nerdy-looking white folk you can ever have. And then we're just, like, screaming this down some country time, like, country lanes. Yeah. And it's just, it's amazing. It's so cathartic, isn't it?
Yeah, but you get that running through the entire album of Iowa, like, this sense of identity that they're looking for, in particular, Corey Taylor, who, you know, was a drug addict at a really young age and suffered really bad abuse when he was a kid. And he found this group of people with whom he could, like, make this really rad, like, heavy, cathartic music. And they go out on this huge tour, and they're carrying along with them all these troubles as they're sort of being idolized. I remember meeting them at, like, Reading 2002 at a signing tent.
Wow.
And I screamed so hard at their performance, I'd lost my voice for the whole weekend. So,
like, this is before you were playing yourself, wasn't it?
Like, we played years, 2 years after that. But I remember getting to the end of the line and Corey Taylor was there, and I just leaned over and said, I'm a guitarist and I'm going to be in a band playing this festival in a couple of years, I swear. And he was like, good luck, brother. But it was absolutely amazing. I came out of the mosh pit with my head, like, staring down. I could not lift my head. It was the first time I'd ever moshed myself to an injury, to a neck injury. But you could see that band were, like, getting so huge, and they were carrying these problems with them. And so, like,
and a lot,
like,
of people
said,
giving them shit as well, because, you know, it didn't become particularly trendy to be into, like, the sort of new metal vibes.
Yeah.
And I think it's only really over the past few years that people have actually sort of reclaimed their love for them, you know, people around our age going, actually, we grew up on that when we were in our teens, and people took the mickey out of us, but they make some incredible music. And
they got so big, like you say, they got so big because, like, the music was incredible. Like, first and foremost, that the music and the live performances were just insane, and they had some crowd control as well. But also their aesthetic was mad. It just all, like, I think it became too, like, you know when people get a bit pretentious, and it became a little bit like, it's too obvious to like and love Slipknot.
Yeah.
People recoil away, and then after a while, sometimes time is a good test for bands, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's weird because I went down a bit of a Slipknot hole about a year ago, and I was looking all about, you know, when they did Iowa and all the troubles they were going through.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it does link it. It does link in quite nicely with this, like, rage and screaming and that cathartic thing. It's very apt, because that is really the metaphor. Well, it's a lot of the time for screaming, isn't it? Is it's letting out that rage in one way, shape, or another. And I've got a few, and I've got one, and I'll mention it later. But it's all linked into that. It's just people getting it off your chest.
Well, do you want to shout one, Chris? Then
I'll name the band, and then if you guys have got that band, we'll just wait until you've done yours, and then I'll sling their one. So I've got Deftones in there in case if anyone else.
We love Deftones so hard, but they're not in it.
Why did we not think of putting them on our list?
Oh my God.
Idiots, because we are massive fans. And was it Leeds 2009 we saw them play as well?
I had a spiritual experience seeing them, because that was the first time I'd ever seen them. We got tickets to see them play, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I had like an anxiety attack, and I couldn't go to the show, and I had to sell the tickets. And luckily, we had a buyer, and they came to the house, and I was sort of like cradling myself on the sofa.
It was Ali Pally, wasn't it?
It was Ali Pally. And I was so looking forward to it. And I remember being in school, and my parents would like Dad took us to AC/DC, which was our first rock show, but they were like, they would never take me to a football match.
Yeah.
And I was never really allowed to go to gigs with my mates. So all my mates went to see Deftones, and they came into school the next day and said, I've got to shake Chino Marino's hand. And like, it was a world, you know, like a life-changing experience for me. And I was just so jealous. Mm. And I think that kind of, that made me fall into the band even more so, because I was like, I so want to feel a connection with this band that I never got the opportunity to go and see.
And again, they were one of those bands that when we were getting to know each other and we'd be talking about stuff, it suddenly creep into conversation. It's like, oh, no way. Like, I love Deftones too. And it's where we realised actually we had such similar tastes in music as well. But yeah, they're absolutely phenomenal, and I'm kicking myself a little bit, so they can be an honorary six.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
they're another band that kind of they balance melody with scream so well. Yeah. And because they hold back when the scream happens, it just like
all more powerful.
The impact is so huge. And I think like with Corey Taylor's scream in People Equal Shit, it's like, okay, so he's like yelling and screaming as he goes through. But there's like this elongation of the words.
Yeah.
One more time, motherfucker. But everybody has to die. Everybody has to die.
What is it?
And he's trying to find himself.
Yeah. What are these things as well? It's like, I'm not afraid to cry, but that's none of your business. And then like, gets the like,
tearing his heart open. Like, this is something like a country musician says. I'm not afraid to cry. Right? Corey Taylor's gone, play that riff, and I'm going to sing these scream these lyrics over the top. And it's like this amalgamation of these various genres coming together, and you just don't expect it.
I've also got to give them a shout out for being the 2020 meme of being shared around, saying that if they can wear masks during like a 2-hour show, then you can wear one to the supermarket.
That's incredible.
It's legendary. I'm like, yep. Damn straight.
In like the hottest conditions. Yeah. Like, and they're sweating their guts out, and they've still got their masks on.
And there's us just being like, oh my God, this little fabric mask, it's so difficult.
With their nose. Like, have you seen the meme of the, it was on Don Jolly's, and it was a meme of having your nose tucked out the top of your
dick nose.
Is face mask is like having your dick tucked out the top of your pen. Oh, it's so good.
Amazing.
So what track was it, Chris?
Right, okay. Just quickly on Slipknot, Wait and Bleed, he does that. He's like, he's so, I remember listening to that, he's so smooth when he's singing the verse, and then he just goes into just absolute perfect. It's raw, but it sonically sounds incredible. But the one I picked is the first, it's the one that converted me into understanding what screaming's about, because I think like if you was to go and give someone some like Norwegian like black metal, and go, this is good, listen to this, they're going to be like, it's bad, it's really awful. And you need that sort of like gateway, don't you?
Yeah,
like my gateway into hip-hop was probably Ice Ice Baby, right? I would listen to it now, but I wouldn't say it so. But I remember...
It did its job, so...
Yeah, exactly. I remember a Belgium school trip, and had a Walkman, and I love my Walkman cassette. And one of my mates who was in economics with me, because I'm really rock and roll like that, we did a tape swap, and he gave me Adrenaline, And
you gave
I
him vanilla rice.
And I gave him Joy Bunny and the Masters. I gave him, I think it was Black Sunday. And I remember sitting on this bus listening to Adrenaline and like the amount of energy I had listening to this song.
Yeah.
And this my song is 7 words. And that's actually about sort of like being, Tino wrote that when he was 16. And it's about being frustrated with society, really, and like how he was being treated. So quite apt these days, to be honest with you. And again, this is like you were saying about Blood Red Shoes. This they will close their sets a lot with this song, and it's just so good. And it's one of those songs where it's got a great, their normal, incredible melodies and stuff like that, and Chino singing, and then it stops, and then it just goes, "Shut up, you don't know me. Shut up, you don't know me. Squeal like a pig when you big fucking, and it's
like the pig scream. So
incredible.
Good.
And then the tempo changes while he's screaming, and I'm just fucking fist pumping on the bus, man.
Yeah.
And I don't love all screams, I don't, but like when they get it right, and like you say, for me, Deftones, that was it.
Yeah,
I was like, I'm listening for something like that standard, and Chino smashed it in that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, if people have just dropped in now and picked up on the conversation, it does sound like Four Serial Killers. I mean, I don't love all screams.
But when we hear them scream, it feels so good. I feel human.
Nobody come to our basement.
Yeah. I feel emotion.
I picked up a load. I wrote a load, and I had a couple of good female ones. And then I was like, "What am I missing any?" Mm. And so I went on Google, and when I put it in, I got a load of bloke, like top fives, but it was all bloke screaming.
Yeah.
I was like, "Come on!" So then I put best female screams into Google. And I thought, "Hold on,
here we go."
I'm not on clever search.
The dark web there.
Exactly. Oh, I'm gonna have the cops knocking.
I swear that's a brilliant segue to our next choice, because it's actually a woman.
Incredible. Let's hear it, guys. Let's go for it. Number three.
Yeah. Rock screaming. So our third choice is the Distillers and The Hunger.
Nice.
And I think, Stu, you and I talked a little bit about Distillers on your Off the Beaten Track podcast, because I was very close to putting them on for what reminded me of my teenage years, but instead I went for the teenage heartbreak with Dogs Die in Hot Cars. But this album, Coral Fang, was the soundtrack of my teens. Like, it came out when I was just turned 13. Mm. And again, I'd never quite heard a woman sing in the way that Brody Dahl does, in a similar way I was saying Laura Mary feels about her voice. And I even attempted to sing this song on stage at the Square in Harlow with very, very little success.
It was, your mum's got a VHS of
VHS of it, which is never coming out ever.
You wait. I'm going to find a converter for that.
And I was much tinier at the time as well, so I didn't quite have the sort of volume that I pack now with my sort of radio voice. So I kind of had to adapt it and do this sort of melodic version of it, which just does not work. Like, this, the whole reason this song is incredible, it's because almost of the absence of lyrics.
Yeah,
I think there's about like one verse and one chorus, and that's it. And it's mostly just, it starts off very gentle, it lulls you into a false sense of security, and then it's like she just belts out this scream.
Yeah,
then it comes back in again, doesn't it? And it goes almost acoustic like, and then you just, it's about nearly 6 minutes long, this track, and then you just have this breakdown where it's just the bass, and then it's her just doing these vocals and just building up into these mental screams. And we were watching it when she did it live at Reading Festival, I think, was it like,
2004,
I think it was earlier, I think it was possibly 2002.
Oh wow, okay.
No, it would have been 2004, because the album came out 2003. So, yeah. God, maths is not my strong point.
No,
it's
numbers,
that's why I'm in the arts. I mean, and just watching her snarl this, like, scream out, and it sounds exactly the same live as it does on the track. Mm. And just hearing that as a kid, it was just blew my mind. And again, it is like, the fact that she's doing this scream almost goes with the title of it being The Hunger. She sounds hungry when she's like making her way through this tune. And the whole album, it was really tough to pick a certain song from it, but I just thought it was always good to give my anecdote of me embarrassing myself on stage.
I think that was worth it to pick that
this little Revo kid that I was. I can even remember what I was wearing. It's so
that was where I was going to go. I've got so many questions. What was the outfit?
I'm gonna say I think it was dungarees.
It wasn't dungarees. Oh. I was wearing a denim skirt, these kind of mock fishnet tights, but not as trashy. They weren't as see-through and holy. Converse, obviously, is what I live in. And then also it was this like vintage Felix the Cat t-shirt. It was like green with a pink trim.
How did I not remember this video?
This kind of weird sort of grunge punk cartoon obsessed girl with ginger hair and a massive fringe, which I've finally grown out. You know, I was a sight to behold. I wasn't quite as cool as Brody Dahl when you see her at that Reading Festival wearing these like tight black skinny jeans, these high top like Converse that actually go up her
car. Like that,
and then this mini corset. Amazing. Like it's like a corset thing, isn't it? Or a waistcoat. And I'm like, why the
she looks like this kind of like yearning ragdoll on the stage that's commanding
with her black hair as well,
arena,
just,
yeah,
so amazing.
Just amazing. But I think like I think Gil Norton produced that record.
I'm
pretty sure he did. And I remember also he said that when he was in the studio they did like the fewest takes that they needed, because Brody Dahl's vocals, her pitching is like on point.
Yeah.
So every time she sings, she's hitting those notes, and it's really just about like capturing the approach, really the best approach. But that's the funny thing about like the best screamers are invariably like the best singers as well. Like they've got this like a certain control on their voice to the point that when they want to lose control, they lose control because they have such control. There's something like really counterintuitive about that, isn't
it? I'm just so happy that she's back and playing live with the band again, because again, you forget that was their last album. 2003 was like the last album they did. And obviously we forget that. I think she's gone to make other music like with Spinnerette and done her own solo stuff as well. But it's such a shame because like, I think they were meant to be having another comeback tour this year, but obviously it's gone to pot, hasn't it, with lockdown. But yeah, she's an incredible person. I've heard she's just absolutely amazing in real life as well. And I've heard many a story of stuff that she's put up with a certain ex-husband of hers as well. So, which I will tell you off air, probably save the gossip, not for this. But yeah, she's an absolute icon.
Yeah, and she's amazing. She's again, so strong and so brilliant, so intelligent.
You know, I wouldn't be doing my show like Riot Diet on Boogaloo Radio focusing on women and rock and indie if it wasn't for people like Brody Dahl through my teens, because whilst obviously I had the Riot Girl and sort of grunge and all that incredible stuff that I had behind me, I also got to look forward and be like, these women are currently, when I was a teenager, currently making incredible tunes and putting themselves on stage, and it's just kept inspiring me to love it, and it's just
paved the way
and it's, I just still adore women in rock and her as much as I did when I was a teenager.
Wonderful. And she just looks so cool whenever you see her, doesn't she?
Oh my god.
You just see her, and like when you see her with her kids, I'm like, oh, they must think you are the best.
I know, like you watch so the video for City of Angels, right, when she's got like the tallest mohawk I've ever seen in my entire life, and
but even like Drain the Blood, where she's got like spikes and stuff out as well. But
when she's not wearing her makeup, she's like supermodel beautiful,
because she's naturally blonde, isn't she? She's sort of naturally Australian, sort of summery blonde, and it's quite cool that she's embraced that now. But it did sort of, the heroin chic did suit her at the time and was very, very cool. I shouldn't really advocate
but she was kind of like a Tim Burton movie in music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, grabbing the goth over here, new and grabbing goth, the punk over here, and then, you know,
just owning it, wearing whatever the hell she wanted. And she looked great. And what was amazing about her is she wasn't a stick on stage as well. Like, she had like these incredible curves, and again, she didn't mind showing them off, which was lovely to see as well. As like a teenager who was suffering myself with like wanting to be ridiculously thin, seeing someone just finding how sexy they are. And she writes about it, you know, she embraces her sexuality so much. Mm. It was really important to see that at the time.
100%.
Good shout, guys. Very good shout. Stu, have you got any you want to throw in?
Billy, have you put your own band in there?
I couldn't, in good conscience. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I did that.
Well, we can.
I've already given him a shout out. I gave him a shout out in Off the Beaten Track. He was my first tune I did with you two. And that's it now. Like, we can.
As much as I love my band, right? And I'm so proud of all our music and all our songs. I still find it so profoundly difficult to listen to my own voice.
Yeah.
Like, if we come on in a rest, like, we're way more popular over in Europe and Russia and America than we are over here. Mm. So I can be out and about and just, like, not come across a fan or be in a restaurant and have our music being played. But if we're, like, in a restaurant in Germany or Austria or Czech Republic and one of our songs comes on, I'm like, I'm just stepping outside.
Right inside, yeah.
I'm like, and when I was at uni for like 3 years and I was writing our fifth album. And just for shits and giggles, like when we're in a revision session, someone would quickly put Spotify up and play, I want to hear what you've got to say or something like that. But straight up and out the door. I was like, I'll come back when you guys have grown the fuck up, all right?
I still think the best story of this from uni is where someone was like, you look just like the lead singer of the Subways, didn't they?
Yeah.
Incredible.
And you were like, no, I've heard he's a right dick.
They didn't get it. They were like, no, he's like, don't say that, he's really nice. I was like, it's me, it's fine.
That's not the first time that's happened though. I remember when we were at sort of the beginning of our relationship and you did this kind of little acoustic open mic thing at the Spice of Life
in West London. Yeah.
And it was hilarious. You went up there and you played some of your own stuff.
I played like, I want to hear, oh yeah, Rock and Roll Queen, because I think I was still writing All or Nothing at the time. And I came off stage and I was like, I'm going to go home. I'm really knackered. Yeah. I'm going home. And my manager was there. So I was like, do you want me to leave my guitar so you can go up and play? Because he's like a secret. I want to be a really big like acoustic.
He's
so cute. So I was like, I'll leave my guitar and you can play a few songs. I'm really sorry I'm not staying to watch, but I'm going. I left and a kid came up to him afterwards and went, he did some really good, he sounds just like the Subways lead singer. He did a really good job there.
Well done, mate. You did a really good job.
Their mind. What? I could have said hello.
Yeah, you should have told him he did a really great job. He sounded just like the singer.
So cute. I just thought you were some weird hardcore fan.
Who wanted to look exactly like the lead singer.
Just playing
as well.
Only Subways tracks. Just like, ooh.
It was a bit like that.
Really?
Like,
you should go out as like a tribute act, like Willie Subway or something like that. Just go.
On a Subway. That's what people actually used to say to him when they recognise him. They don't call you Billy Lunn. They go, Billy Subway. We actually had during lockdown. And it was like, this is the most middle class thing ever. We went to a local M&S.
Marks and Sparks, yeah.
Some food. Because, you know, that's what we do now that we're in our first.
We were having like a really serious conversation as we were paying.
I can't even remember what it was. I think it was about all the stuff that was going on, like in the band. And we're just sort of having this thing, which putting it through. This guy goes, hey, Billy Subway!
He's like packing someone's,
you just
packing
had
someone's
hair
bag.
As well,
yeah, he goes, hey, Billy Subway, nice hair!
And also, bless him, he then sent me a direct like message request on Instagram going, I did know it was you too, and I'm really sorry I didn't say hello to you. It was just like Billy was the first person that stood out.
I think it was the hair.
I changed my hair so much so I can avoid small talk. So I don't mind.
Well, have you got any rage in yours, Billy?
Yeah.
It's the next one.
Right, okay. I'll change it.
No, please.
I reckon I've got the same one. And
go ahead.
Zach screams a lot. He's quite. They're quite angry. It's in the title.
Is
mate.
Your scream in an intro?
No.
It's
right. Cool. Good. Well, just quickly, who does the scream in Subways? The little yeah in with you.
That's invariably me. Yeah, that's
true.
I do. Yeah, I would love Charlotte to try a scream, but even
Because it's a really sort of short, stabby one. And like, yeah. And I was like, yeah. You just bark like a dog. A small dog.
Look at the way when Cartman shows himself.
You know, in South Park, when Cartman is on the top of the house, he's got like cardboard wings, right? And he goes, "This, the dawn of man's hand. It's like, man has learned to take flight."
It's like, just jump, you asshole.
Yeah, Kyle's like, "Just jump, you asshole." He goes, "Shut up, Kyle." And so he steps forward, he goes, "Since the dawn of mankind, man has dreamed of taking flight. Now I shall take flight." And he just flops off and goes, like, or it's more like a
oh man. Do you know we've never done a top five South Park? I'd fucking...
We will happily come back for another special.
Absolutely.
Keep our impressions of us going...
all right, so I'll go rage. I'm going to go Sleep Now in the Fire.
Oh, that song is amazing.
And he goes...
I've loved that song so long. And that video for that song is incredible. Because Michael Moore for that, right?
Of course.
And we were due to play with Rage Against the Machine on the same day, on the same stage. Like, we were going to play it like 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Reading this year, right? Which has been cancelled. And we're like, it was the first time you were going to be back at the festival on the main stage.
I was going to go up to them and say, "Are you guys playing Sleep Now in the Fire in your set?" And if they said no, I was going to get us to play Sleep Now in the Fire, right? And say this is dedicated to like the most amazing band in the world. Because like Rage Against the Machine are one of those bands who I can't imagine a life without. We toured a lot.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Over in America, we did really well off the back of appearing in the OC. And Michael Goldstone, who was our project manager over there on the East Coast, he was the A&R guy who signed Rage Against the Machine in Los Angeles. And I spent most of my time with Michael Goldstone talking about Rage Against the Machine because I wanted to know fucking everything.
Yeah, I bet you
like,
did.
The thing that he would always say is like, imagine you're a 15, 16-year-old kid and you have your all-time favorite band. But you get to be in charge of that band, right? You get to be in the studio when they're making their records. You get to be side of stage when they're playing their biggest shows in the world. That was me every single day when I worked with Rage Against the Machine. And I think on this new album, we've decided to be more political. And we're releasing a song late this year that's hugely mass. Like, without Rage Against the Machine, this song wouldn't even have existed. And I think there was a period of time when Rage Against the Machine, they actually like broke up, didn't they? They left and then Audioslave came about. And everyone almost pined for Rage Against the Machine in their absence, probably more than they loved Rage Against the Machine whilst they were still going.
It's like you appreciate what you lost.
Yeah, totally.
I think also, you know, we're going through such sort of times of political upheaval as
Exactly.
That all these bands, it's the same with Riot Girl as well. How many of these bands are having a resurgence and coming back? And it's because of the fact that we're angry and we need these people to come and sort of fight for us through music and the arts again. And it's just, again, it just makes me laugh so much with the fact that recently, what was it when Rage Against the Machine came out and said something political and all these like boomers across Twitter got really angry, be like, I'm going to burn these CDs. It's like, which machine did you think they were raging against, you idiots?
Because they were like, I never thought you'd get political, but now you've got political. It's like,
there was a brilliant one.
The Rage song.
That's it. I've had enough. I'm burning all your records and my pink albums.
That is
amazing.
I just still remember with the fact that I think what really also gave them back with their popularity again is when they had that number one campaign and they actually got to number one with Killing Your Neck Off.
About that is quite weird. The guy that organised that...
John Mortar, isn't it?
Yeah, so John's like an Essex boy and John used to come to my club and that's where he heard Rage and that's where... And so we've had him on and he literally just set that up on Facebook just to see what happened.
Yeah.
And then... I mean, he's told the story a gazillion times and it's fascinating. You know, the ultimate guerrilla marketing that you could never, ever have imagined would topple what was, you know, the mammoth, you know, thing that was X Factor or whatever, or Pop Star, whatever it was at the time.
Yeah, it was. Topple
that,
it?
Yeah, was unheard of. And, yeah, it's like, and he said as soon as it went to number one, the first call he got was Simon Cowell offering him a job.
That's so Simon Cowell, isn't it? It's like,
keep your enemies close.
Yeah, of course. And then obviously, you know, he got to hand the big giant check over for the charity to them when they come over and done the free show at Finsbury Park, which what a moment, man.
They went on Five Live, and it's like Five Live we're saying,
yeah.
Okay, so play the song because you're number one. That's fantastic. Congratulations, everybody. But please don't swear, okay? Because this is a national broadcasting organisation and we're a family station and nobody can swear. And they're like, yeah, okay, cool. But you clearly have no idea what this band is about. Like, first opportunities. I don't know, I just went, motherfucker. They were right at another set. Congratulations, Rage Against the Machine.
I'd like nothing more than to have heard Whoopsie Daisy, I Won't Do What You Tell Me. That would have sounded amazing.
Friendly edit.
I found that I was learning back when I first heard of Rage Against the Machine, and I'd read all the articles in the magazines, and Tom Morello would talk about like the first time he heard The Clash and one of the reasons he got into politics and eventually went to study politics at Harvard. And one of the reasons why he started with the band was because of The Clash, because, you know, they managed to fuse like these incredible songs and these like the political material.
Values, yeah.
Yeah. And lived those values both in the music and on the streets and through their lives. And I genuinely think that I learned more about American politics and world politics from Rage Against the Machine than I ever did anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that's so like the importance of these kinds of bands is that they teach us so much.
I was just going to say, it just still makes my heart sing when I drop it at the end of the night and like Propaganda.
Yeah.
And people still go nuts and they are just chanting along to it.
We haven't actually mentioned the name of the track.
No, we will go on to our track in a second. But yeah, like Killing the Name Of, when we drop, like I drop it and you just like, you just got the vroom to begin with. And it's like the feeling that I get, like the rush through me. And it's not even my own song. And I've just got like the sort of chords building up and then just all of these people just just who have managed to last 5 hours, so they're pretty gone on their WKD by then. They are just
the sugars,
like,
keeping them
sugars
going.
They're just like screaming it back at me, and I'm just like, this is what music's about, man.
It's like magic, though. That's what I always think. Words talking and music is like magic, because you can create that something from nothing. And like, even when I was like doing this prep, and I hadn't listened to, for example, Seven Words and a bunch of Rage stuff, and immediately it just turns a gear in you. It gives you energy that you never thought you had. And that links back to, like, I went to the Great Escape these years ago, and I'd had a very exceptionally good time, as Stu will know. And last night,
you're carrying your leg first out the bar. Feet first, leg first, leg feet. My mind, brain.
It was Sunday night, and I was kind of like, I was done. I think I'd probably gone too hard. And my mates were like, Subway's a plan. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Because like, I want to see you, but
I'm
so
dead. That's just the
response
you want, Billy. When you announce the tour, Subway's a plan. Oh, for fuck's sake.
But I was so dead. Response.
Everybody's reaction.
Yeah, we'll just have that as a tagline.
Subway's a back on tour, for fuck's sake.
We'll have it for this podcast as well, Billy. We'll have it for our little statement. But I was like, I wish I had saved myself, you know, had a bit left in the tank. And I came and watched you, and then you see, like, Rage, Pip got me into Rage, and I found Deftones, but it's the same sort of thing that I found with you guys in Subways. It's just that energy switch on, and I went going to that thing, and then after about your second song, I pushed my way into the front, and that was it. And I came out of that place dripping, but that energy just came from nowhere. You know, I thought I was done. And yeah, I just think Rage Against the Machine are a perfect example of that as well. They just, it comes from nowhere, and it can do something to our brain. It is like magic to me.
Yeah. It does. And I think I genuinely think, right, that rock and roll music is probably the best example of our most primal inclinations. Mm. Like, I think I may have chatted about this with you, Stu, on Off the Beaten Track. I think, like, rock music harks back to this time when we were, like, on the verge of forming civilization. We were praying for rain, praying to the gods, dancing around the campfire, banging drums, chanting at the sky. And that's carried itself all the way through our civilization, through Antonin Artaud at the turn of the 20th century, screaming at this pulpit, at this press conference, as he sort of brought up, what was it, the Theatre of Cruelty. Mm-hmm. And that got carried into, like, punk music and metal, and right through to, like, kind of, you know, generic rock every single day. So whenever we get on stage, I feel like I'm my truest self, in that I'm not wearing, like, the mask and the clothes and the attitude that is expected of me in everyday society. I get on stage.
It's like your neighbor.
Yeah, you are completely... you are given the opportunity, if you choose to strip yourself of all those societal expectations, which is why it's so important that I think people get in the mosh pit and embrace each other and dance with each other and get a sense of community and a sense of social cohesion.
And again, it's like experiencing a film in a cinema with other people. You know, there's just something that just doesn't come close to having these Zoom gigs and stuff, which is what's breaking my heart. And like, because I was in an article in Vice where I was interviewed about not getting to DJ, and I just said there is just nothing quite like being there and just playing someone's favorite song and just seeing that pure joy and reaction in that first bar when you play it. And then just that real sort of, like you said, primal energy, the community. It's where people start bonding and they come together, because you're all so close to each other as well. And I think that's what we're finding one of the hardest things with lockdown, is not only that we're not experiencing it, that we're not facilitating that. And it's kind of heartbreaking to see, but and I just still realize we still haven't said our choice for it.
Do you want to say it?
So we chose Wake Up.
Yes.
And it's not just because I'm obsessed with The Matrix and when my uncle gave me VHS.
What an ending.
There is
it's a mixture of, like, Keanu Reeves, as everyone knows, I'm just in love with, and then also just him just flying up to the sky, where it's just and then it's like, wake up through the credits. Good.
And Rowena, I could so say that. Like, I even think how that story went. I remember being, I think it was 18 when it was released, and me and my mates went to watch it. And by the end, we were screaming at Neo to get up after he'd been shot. Yeah. And I think that's crazy that we were that engaged into it. We're like, get up, get up, get up.
Yeah.
And wake up comes at the end. We were like, we were so pumped out walking out.
Yeah. So remember, like, when did it come out? Was it 99?
Yeah, 98, 99. Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't even 10 then when it came out. And I was given this sort of ratty copy of a VHS from my uncle, who, again, often I get his leftovers. And it's why I'm into whatever, like, whatever I'm into.
That's why she wears the big T-shirts.
Yeah, you know, I'm just basically just... because I'm used to just wearing whatever he used to wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, again, that just totally inspired me. So that was one reason that we love it. But again, I think it's just that sort of build up again, similar to The Hunger by Distillers, where it sort of softens and they bring it back a little bit and it's just some gentle percussion.
Jazzy notes as well. Like,
and then just the fact that the screaming then just builds until it's just like, wake up! And then when he gives that, delivers those final lines afterwards, when it's like, how long, not long, what you reap is what you sow. And then it's just like, mic drop, motherfuckers.
Yeah. Like, even now, it's like, it's getting, I can feel the blood pumping through my veins, because we're in a time when things are so, so depressing and so, you feel so downheartened, like, by the political system.
And society,
and society at large. Like, where are we for each other? Like, where we should be linking arms and looking after the most vulnerable society. And like, Zach de la Rocha in this song is talking about like the history of oppression all the way through the song, from 68 in the first verse when he talks about Hoover,
MLK, and
you know, and then came the shot, and how it sort of extends all the way to the present time. And
it's almost like it feels very cinematic, because it feels like it has parts as it goes through. It tells a story and narrative and the sort of ups and downs throughout the song. Yeah. You're taken on a journey, and then when it just ends on this screaming and then that line delivered, I'm just like, I'm done for.
But we were watching the video of them at Woodstock in 99 when they played it, and it's a long song.
Which I must say... has tits at the beginning, because literally the first shot is to a crowd of a groupie and they're just like full shut up. And I was like, moving on.
That's so Woodstock.
But
like you forget this, because the song's got loads of parts to it. Like, so you've got the narrative part, and then you've got like this little jam, and then you've got like Tom Morello's detuning his guitar.
Yeah, just during the song. Getting the pitch in right.
How good he is. You can just detune it whenever it like, and by ear gets it back in tune again. And then you've got the riff part, and then you've got the breakdown.
Yeah.
And then like the build up, and then the outro when Zach de la Rocha just screams, wake up. But when watching it at Woodstock 99, and you see them playing the song, and they're kind of like, they look like a jazz band when they're on stage. You know, Tom Morello's got his guitar really high, you know, Brad Wilker's just doing his thing, like he's a classical drummer. And Zach de la Rocha's just like sort of doing the poetics of the song. But when they get to the final part of the song, when Wake Up is started
pure
screaming, every single one of them on the stage go insane.
Yeah.
To the point where they almost fall to the floor. In
I think he does at one point, doesn't he? When falls he scream to the floor and wake up.
And just like spent of energy.
Mm.
And that is the scream. That is the frustration, the feeling, the sense of like decades long, centuries long.
It's
oppression.
From their debut album as well. You just think, Jesus, who's making music like this on their first run?
How talented can you be?
there are still bits in that I hear, and then I'm like, oh, right, that's that. And that's incredible. Like, it was so intelligent.
And importantly, that was like, well, I reckon 30 years ago, maybe 30 years old, the album. And
it could be released today and still sounds
exactly my point. That's exactly what I was going to say.
No, don't tell.
But it is. It's like, it does. It still sounds so vital, like lyrically, and so fresh, and like, and there's no production on it that's dated in any way. It still sounds vital. It's brilliant. Yeah.
That's what I love about music. And it's the same with film. I still feel with music, I think it's because when you first listen to it when you're a teenager or a kid, you're just like, I love it. But as you get older and you experience more in life, suddenly lines have a hell of a lot more meaning. And it's just great, and that shows true genius with music, that it just transcends all generations. And like, Rage are forever going to do that.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, So you've got one left, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Number one.
Do you know what? I'm not going to say that, but I've got a feeling I know what it is. Right.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. I'm going to tell you. You're going to say, and then he's going to let you know if you get it right. While we do that, guys, if you all individually think of numbers, well, I've got all your numbers, and you need to tell me first.
Do you want to say just quickly?
No, I don't want to, because it will be my number one.
Okay. But I want to hear your number. I want to hear, and you, Chris, I want to hear both your number ones before we do ours, actually. I'm really intrigued.
Well, my one was the Deftones. That would be the one that I would probably stitch to that. But just what you said about Sleep Now in the Fire, which is a bit weird, because in that video that they shot, there's a poster board saying Trump for president.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
It was done absolutely ironically, obviously, and stupidly.
Yeah, of course, because they you got people wearing masks and then marching because it was taken at a march. Jesus. But they were marching on Wall Street, weren't they? And they were talking about especially in New York, like it's.
Because that's what the Trump dynasty did, didn't they? Like during Giuliani, the troubles of the 70s, they just went and bought up New York and just like.
And Giuliani like. Heavily, like his policies in New York in the 80s and 90s was basically like three strikes and you're out. But that obviously only really affected people of color in New York. So
still does.
They got criminal records and then they couldn't get jobs. And that's essentially how he allegedly cut crime that way. It's not. He just incarcerated a load of poor people.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's, again, like why Rage Against the Machine is so incredibly important, because
their next record is just going to be Told Ya.
Yeah.
Told Ya! Told Ya!
And the frustration of being right. And
There'll be no smuggling. You'll
reap what you sow.
Yeah. But it took far too long.
So what's your number one, Stu? I'm intrigued.
Yeah. I'm not going to say it because I think it might be yours. But I've got a couple of quickies I'll throw in. The beginning of Even Flow by Pearl Jam, where Eddie just goes, wow, and it just drops.
Amazing.
And then a recent one, I thought I'd try and do something a bit more recent. It's not that recent. There's a track by the Maccabees called Marks to Prove It. When it all drops, Felix just goes, about 30 seconds, and I love it.
Felix is such a sweetheart as well.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's lovely, isn't he? I love how much he loves his cricket. Such a gentle
soul. Yeah, that is so cute.
Little geek. But no, it's awesome. Again, it's these people who you don't expect to be able to pack a real scream and then they make like this sound.
If you get a chance, watch it. If you put in Marks to Prove It, Maccabees, Glastonbury, they do it on stage. I think Jamie T's playing with them as well. Really? And you just watch Fee, because obviously Orlando's just got this really beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And Fee just howls like a banshee. It's mental. It's so good. Give it a listen.
I'll never forget, actually, we played with them a festival with them in Germany. It was one of those festivals where they have stages facing each other, and for like 45 minutes or an hour they'll have one stage and then everyone will sort of shift over to the other stage. And Maccabees were playing a couple of bands before us, and I was like, I love their new record. Like Wall of Arms just came out, and it was like it just kind of like compounded my initial love for them. And No Kind Words had just come out, and I was like, I so hope they play No Kind Words. So as soon as they came on stage, I just yelled out No Kind Words like this in the audience, and they kicked into it, and then Felix looks at me and goes, oh, this is for Billy Subway. I was like,
yes,
I'm not one of these people that plays it cool. I can't do irreverence. Like if I see someone I really respect or love, I'm like, I love you. So bad.
Well, you know, life's short.
It's too short. Exactly.
Oh. Do it.
What's the number one then? Let's do it.
Okay, so when we were talking about this, like we both pretty much at the same time said this was going to be our number one. And it's probably so easy for anyone who knows us that we were going to choose this band, and especially this song. And it's Nirvana's Drain You.
You are. For the record, Stu's just held up a piece of paper that says
High fives, come on.
High fives.
That's incredible.
Amazing.
So good.
It just shows how well you know us, yeah. And also how much we constantly blab on about everything.
But we've not talked about this at all online.
We haven't said anything about what we were picking at all. The only person I spoke to was Laura Mary, and it's only because I was giving her a warning that I was going to talk about her. And
your ears will burn.
And then both of us just looked at each other and we were like, yeah, we've got to put Drain You in it. And again, like Stu, I've spoken to you about my passion for this. Again, it's thanks to my uncle giving me a cassette of Nevermind that sort of just totally made me realize music could be this way, and like introduced me to grunge and like my eternal love for Kurt Cobain. And again, partly why I always look like him. My hair's currently going through his Kool-Aid sort of phase.
You kind of had this cross between Kurt Cobain and Pippi Longstocking, I think.
Yeah, thank And it's just like both of us, like part of the reason we really connected was our love of Nirvana and Kurt Cobain, and it had to be this song just because we both said that we remember when we first heard it, and there's that breakdown, and it's like you can explain like the unusual sort of sounds that are just rustling and
rolling,
the building, and because you know what actually made it, like the sounds, didn't
so
you?
Like when they made Drain You, they had this really elongated middle section where it was just this build-up. And so they managed to, like, Kurt was a collector. And also he was an artist. So, like, he would sculpt things. He would make things out of plastic. Like, he would mould and make paintings and all that sort of stuff. But he made these sort of squeaky toys. And the squeaks you can hear, like that's a squeaky toy that he picked up. But also, like, there's this real industrial feel to the middle of the song.
Yeah.
And that comes about because they had a can of deodorant in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
And they held it up to the microphone and went, shh, shh. And it sounds like this kind of piston releasing.
Yeah, yeah.
Steam. Like you're in a factory. Yeah.
And once you hear that once, you can never not hear that.
Yeah.
Hear it constantly now.
It's so multi-layered, like the build-up. There's so much going on. Mm. Even just like the odd notes, the do-do-do-do-do. He was sort of like the purveyor at the time of organised chaos, which kind of comes from, I think, Captain Beefheart's Trout Mask Replica.
Definitely.
You know, they spent 21 months in a cabin learning the album so that it sounds like they've just piled in at any random moment when actually they've really meticulously planned it. But in this build-up, they've done just that. Like, they've meticulously planned everything to the point where when the drums come in and Kurt Cobain just lets rip.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. And every time I hear it, and I'm trying to think how old I would have been when I first heard this. I think it was around, like I said to you before, Stu, that it was around the time my dad left. So I was probably about 6 or 7. And I remember on this scratchy little cassette tape, this little Walkman I had to rewind and go back and listen to it again because I was so blown away by an already incredible song just being elevated to this level where it was almost transcendent. Yeah. I was just like, what just happened? I didn't know, like, again, I didn't know that you could do this in a song and it was okay. And it made it, like, so cool.
Yeah.
And just... like almost an out-of-body experience. And it feels so weird saying that about something that is just basically like instruments and someone's vocals.
Yeah.
But again, it's like we were saying, it's the power of music. And just Kurt Cobain's scream, for me, it's hardly ever going to be beaten.
Yeah, it's never... like when he does that scream, right, it sounds like he's in some chamber on the seventh layer of hell, right? And we are hearing like an echo of that scream from the seventh layer of hell.
Mm.
But then, like... he turns it and he's coming in and singing, and he manages to balance like utter aggression from the gut and then come in with like this sweet melody with these really ironic lyrics, like laden with irony and laden with ambiguity and metaphor. And I was just saying to you today, when he says like, with eyes so dilated, I've become your pupil. I've only just realized he's talking about two things there. He's talking about with your eyes dilated, I've become your pupil because I can see myself in your pupil because it's so dilated. And at the same time, he's become the protege like of this person, like a student. And you just think, this guy was a genius. Yeah. He was such a genius.
But also then all of this just harnessed so brilliantly by Butch Vig, which you, who you've actually got to work with personally. Yeah. And I was saying this on the car on the way back, because we were talking about, like, oh, we still, yesterday when I picked you up from the studio, I was like, oh, are we still happy with this top five? And I said to you, like, part of the, one of the only reasons I really like to have kids is to tell them the stories of the fact that you got to work with the producer
who made Nevermind,
you know, who got to say to you, oh, by the way, that microphone you're using, that's exactly the same setup as Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, I used the same mic and preamp combination that Kurt Cobain used for Nevermind. And he swung around in his chair. It's like the first week that we were working with Butch as well. So we, like, actually, no, we'd spent like a week in pre-production as well, so we were getting to know him then. And we were already on good terms with him because we crossed paths when we were touring and Garbage were touring. But it was the first time that we'd been in a studio setting when we were like, oh my God, we're in the studio with Butch Vig, who's like recorded Siamese Dream and like Dirty.
And this was like at the beginning of our relationship as well, so obviously I was just started starstruck about it as well.
And and I think Kurt Cobain has been... the defining inspiration in both like my life and my musical career.
And for both of us as well. Because again, like, he was a massive feminist. Yeah. He was also, he's anti-racist. He was anti-homophobia. Yeah. And, you know, again, sort of the reason Smells Like Teen Spirit exists is because Kathleen Hanna wrote Kurt Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know, on
and
on
he
the
thought
wall.
She was like complimenting him, but it just...
He was taking
Teen
the piss
was
out of like this crappy deodorant. And it just... he's someone that has like really had a massive impact on our tastes and our sort of lives and how we've gone. Even again, just, you know, I was talking, I've got this interview coming up where I'm doing a style profile for this brand that was set up by my agent. And there's this question where it's like, okay, so your three style icons, dead or alive. And I was talking through my mum, and my mum just went, Kurt Cobain. Like, it's the first one. And I was like, yeah, actually, you're right. That was going to be one of my first choices, because I think he's just, again, had such a huge thing. And it was a massive coping mechanism through school when I was very disillusioned with school. I was disillusioned with life because and men, because my dad left and I was going through a really tough time with that. And, you know, it was his
you
vocals.
You need to believe there was a good man.
His scream and that sort of build up, you know, and just hearing this incredible music that started my journey of finding catharsis and love and through music. And again, like, we met in a venue. Like, it's
where screams were definitely happening that night.
Oh,
but no, the band.
I don't mean it didn't sound like that.
I think the best of everybody.
I heard it how you intended it to be.
Try and be sincere.
I'm just double checking.
She has such a dirty mind. It's unbelievable.
I was a young, naive teenager.
So was I.
So.
But, can I say that so I wasn't Drain You, but my number two was off that same record. And how I wanted to present it to you guys was, it for me, the whole song just feels like it's a scream, even though it's not always, but Territorial Pissings is...
Oh, my God, it's so good.
It's that same thing, like the whole thing just feels like a mad, wild scream. And
he gets to the end and he's losing his voice. Yeah. Like, you think, how are you going to sing the next song on the album?
He's,
his voice is... bedraggled by the end of it. It's like scratchy and dry, and you think he's going to need some serious honey and lemon post.
and at the end of Stay Away as well.
Of course,
there are so many tracks to choose from, but again, I think it's with Drain You because it was kind of unexpected because of the fact that the song in the build-up doesn't feel like it's going to be culminating.
And it's a love song.
It's
one of the grossest love songs you'll ever hear in your entire life. But it's a love song, and you just think, like, there's something quite beautiful and twisted about the fact that he's screaming like that in the middle of a love song and in this really kind of industrial post-industrial sounding landscape.
And it's almost as if it just didn't, it's almost like it didn't happen. It's like, oh yeah, that build up we just did, I'm just going to scream and we're going to go back into the song.
But you kind of got that when like, I never got to see them live, obviously, but like when they play live, he looks like someone who's just terribly unhinged and on the verge of breakdown. And you look at the 92 performance when they, again, they're so ironic. All of them are so funny and ironic because everyone was in the media was saying, oh, he's too ill, he won't show up, they'll cancel when he comes on stage, like, being willed by Chris Novoselic.
That's such a crazy
You know, in this wig, in this, like, in this gown, like he's just come from a mental institution.
I think it's also, for me personally, is one of the most gorgeous, like, he's ever looked on stage with his hair just in that kind of slightly ruffled bowl cut.
Like middle length. And,
it's just like, but I think it's also because the performance is incredible. Like,
that's also the best performance of Drain You as well, Reading.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, we
it's
were looking so through them incredible. And that's what we went back to. Yeah. And it's one of those things on YouTube, like when I start falling down a music sort of video rabbit hole of stuff, I always go back to that performance and I watch it probably every couple of months.
I've just remembered something and it's going to make me cry. After the performance, right? After there's this video after the performance. They've just done this incredible headline set at Reading Festival. They've come off stage and Kurt's at the bottom of the ramp as the gear's being unloaded and being put back on the trailer, and he's smoking a cigarette, and this young lad walks up to him, and this is what's so incredible, is that he goes on stage and he's this unhinged troubled man that's
talented,
like screaming and singing and, you know, wriggling around on the floor on stage, and he's off stage and he's having the cigarette and he's got like a beer can in his hand, and this young English boy comes up to him and goes, excuse me, would you mind signing this for me, please? He goes, oh yeah, of course I will, yeah, how are you doing, did you enjoy the show? Yeah, can I just say, I think the media have been really unfair to you and your wife. And he goes, oh dude, thanks so much, man. And he's like this soft, gentle man. Yeah. And you just, like, I curse the universe that I never got to meet him and never got to know him and never got to embrace him and tell him how beautiful he was. Kind of like invoking Partridge there.
Yeah.
When Partridge says, were they any good? Yeah, they were brilliant. Someone should have told him. I think, like, and he's kind of, for me, that's kind of like the epitome of how I want to act and be in a band, you know?
Apart from the heroin, yeah.
Of course. Apart from that. And the downturn and the, you know, the obvious, like, the loss of life there. But, you know, anytime I feel like I'm losing my bottle or I'm losing courage, or, you know, I don't want to speak out about this thing that's happening that I think I should use my voice for, use my platform for. I remember this interview that he gave on MTV when they were talking about the song Rape Me. And they were doing like these vox pops and people were saying, why are they releasing a song about rape? And he said, the song isn't about rape, it's an anti-rape song. Mm. It's a song about like anti-violence that invokes rape. And then he looks at the camera and he says, if any of you are racist, homophobic, misogynist, never listen to our shows and never come to any of our, never listen to our music, never buy our music and never come to any of our shows. And I always remember that he had the courage to look down a camera on MTV and say, don't buy our records if you're this kind of person. Mm. And it makes me want to be a better man and a better musician.
Yeah.
And I think like that's why Kurt Cobain lives in both of our hearts so deeply.
And it's just, you know, it's difficult because I think a lot of people get very blasé about Nirvana now because so many people know about him and he's just become almost like this mythical
icon.
Morbid fascination as well because of what happened to him, that people sort of either sort of deride him for what he did or they put him too much on a sort of pedestal that they actually forget about his talent and what sort of incredible music they did make. You know, he's more than just a slogan on a Primark t-shirt that unfortunately seems to be the sort of trend nowadays. And I'm not sort of judging anyone for wearing a band t-shirt. I'm not one of these people that would go up and play In Bloom and be like, what's this song, and then deride them for not knowing it, because I've seen people do that.
That is awful.
It's really the lowest of the low. If you're into like music, just don't be a dick. That makes you a true music fan. But I think it's so important to sort of almost forget all the sort of hype and the mythology that has come around the band and just actually look back at the sort of strip back things, maybe some of their demos and stuff like that, just to remind yourself what a talented like bunch of people, him in particular, yeah, were.
And they were fragile and, yeah, you know, and
they were young. And, you know, he was 27, so he was younger than I was when he died. Mm. And I think we forget that. It's only as I get older, I'm realized that I'm like, Jesus, he was a baby. Christ, 27 is just, yeah, no age. Same, yeah, with Amy Winehouse and anyone from the 27, yeah, Club. It's no age at all. And, you know, it's a lot of weight to be on people's shoulders. And, you know, you're someone that's, you've nearly buckled under the weight of the industry and sort of trauma in your own life. And you've dealt with it by turning to sort of alcohol and drugs, which you happily talk about, but you're obviously sober for nearly 7 years now, yeah, which is incredible.
And thank you so much. But if it weren't for Ro, I definitely wouldn't be here.
I wasn't asking for that. I was just saying that it's like, no, some people succumb to it. And
I think she was fishing for that, actually.
Yeah, I thought she was just fishing a little bit for that.
It's like, yeah, say how amazing I am. I'm asking for glory.
I genuinely believe it. So, but yeah, and Daisy as well, our doggy Daisy,
who passed away, bless her, yeah. But it's just, again, it's, you just remember that he was a fragile soul, that was, he was a baby when he passed away,
but a musical genius, and you just, yeah, have to listen to the screen. Listen to
Drain, you listen to the build up, and I'm just unbelievably and unbearably jealous of anyone who gets to hear that for the first time,
yeah,
because you just never experience it like that again.
I love the fact that, like, as soon as you said that top five, I just straight away, I thought, I know mine's Drain You. And then when you said a cut, I just thought, I bet they've gone for Drain You as well. And I thought, I'm not going to say it because I don't. And there's a lot of songs to choose from in the world.
There is.
Like,
too many. And yeah. And which is why we kind of enjoyed the arguing, because it's like, this one, but this one trumps this because of, yeah, this. You get to sort of give your conditions as to why. But I think Nirvana were always going to be number,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, very glad. Yeah,
definitely. Well, Billy, Ro, thank you so much. It's been an absolute blast.
It's awesome.
You didn't
cancel each other out. There was a multiplier effect
later on the way home.
Don't worry. we'll have some argument about something.
Start on your top five South Park.
Yes.
Oh my god, we're gonna have.
We will. We will argue over that because you like various episodes compared to me, don't you?
There are some episodes you're like, how can you like this?
No. I tend just to like anything where Cartman shows himself up and he gets like
Casa Bonita.
Like Casa Bonita as well. I just like quote that so much.
So, son, you're going to juvie. Was it worth it?
Totally.
Well, are you guys going to be okay if we tag you in it when we put this out and ask people to come up with their alternatives that they'd recommend as screens? Wonderful. Billy, Ro, thanks so much. It's been absolutely
great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It's been awesome.
Thank you.
All the best.
Take
care. Speak soon, guys.
Oh, yeah. I just want to quickly tell you about this magazine. It's called Pod Bible. Now, Pod Bible is the new essential guide to podcasts. It's put together alongside Spotify and Acast, and it's a one-stop shop to tell you all about the podcasts you maybe know about, but definitely about a load of the podcasts that you probably don't know about that we think you should know about. I mean, in the first edition, there's interviews with Adam Buxton, interviews with Craig Parkinson, there's features on Jade Adams, and there's just an abundance of information about so many exciting podcasts that are out there. Also, Spotify have given us these amazing little codes. So if you do get a print copy, you can just turn on your Spotify on your phone, scan the little code, and it just automatically opens up the podcast on your listening device. How good's that? If you haven't managed to get a print copy, then just go over to www.podbiblemag.com and read it online, because the digital version is all over there and it's all free. So every other month there'll be a new edition out. So go and have a look and support us on the social medias as well. PodBibleMag.com.
It's a drunken soiree in the Within.
Chris and Stu present Hardcore Listing, the podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.